Early history must be completely rewritten. Modern man's view of ancient history is plagued by the belief that men come from a common ancestor of apes, so-called ape men or cavemen. Because of this belief, modern men believe that they are the smartest and the most highly evolved. They think that everything that they are doing is new, in spite of the fact that Ecclesiastes long ago warned them that there is nothing new under the sun, nor shall there ever be. Because they believe that the earliest ancestors were Neanderthals with poorly developed brains compared to modern men, they cannot begin to comprehend what actually has happened in history. All ancient persons have stories of catastrophes. The two most prevalent are a flood tradition and a fire, earthquake, sky darkening tradition. In addition, all ancient writings attest to something that is known as the gods. And then there are half god, half humans, and then finally, fully human beings. These themes are interwoven into nearly every creation myth or major cosmogony, including those of the Sumerians, the Egyptians, the Babylonians, the Mayas, Aztecs, and Incas, and Pacific Ocean peoples, the Persians, the Greeks, the Romans, and from the Romans to the ancient Europeans, and from them to the modern Europeans. Certainly, they betray a single source. Now, I will tell you as best I am able what really has gone on according to the ancient, pre-writing and early writing, stories of nearly all nations, countries, and races, and peoples, combined with 150 years of the latest archaeological finds that I am able to confirm by means of works of authorities in the field. All stories begin with a supreme god and lesser deities referred to as gods. The supreme god created man and woman. Some sort of a war erupted amongst the gods. A deity is murdered. Are they mortal after all? Sometimes the murdered one will be revived. Some god or other is typically murdered and chopped up. Then a woman either collects together the body parts or makes shrines at the location of the body parts. There is an underworld. It is a dark, forbidding place with a lord of the underworld who watches over all who pass through his gates into his domain. This place is usually entered by dying, although the gods were apparently able to travel semi-freely through this region and yet return to the world of the living. While most of what went on before the flood is but a dim memory, with the records having for the most part disappeared, being destroyed either by conquerors or by time, what we would commonly think of as history begins immediately following the flood. Every people on the earth have a flood tradition. It is found in the earliest existing writings and continues from there into all other religions and cosmogonies throughout the entire planet, including the primitives found in the most remote parts of the earth, of whom I will have much more to say later, i.e., they are the bedrock upon which civilization is built. Think about that sometime, complete with their witch doctors and wars with neighboring tribes. The flood was a universal flood. It was purposely caused by the gods. The purpose was to destroy mankind because the gods had intermingled their seed with the seed of women, creating Nephilim, a name whose actual meaning is unknown and about which there is a great deal of rank speculation, which is not helpful at all. Whatever it is that they created, it was serious enough that the entire earth needed to be inundated with water to get rid of it. The Bible in the book of Genesis tells us that there was a firmament surrounding the earth so that it was continually watered as a gigantic garden. When Elohim made the flood, he did so by breaking the fountains of the deep, which is normally thought to mean water that is normally beneath the ground, while also causing the water that was in the air to suddenly condense. So much so that it took 40 days and 40 nights of continual raining in order to turn the firmament into what we now perceive as the oceans and great inland seas. At some time, people on earth were exposed for the first time to the majesty of the heavens and to the sun and solar radiation. This is the reason that men are reported to have lived for very long times, up to nearly 1,000 years, and then, rather suddenly, started dying younger and younger until 120 years seemed like a long life. All flood traditions tell that only several persons came through the flood. These persons are commonly believed to have landed in the mountains of eastern Turkey, now known as Angri Dağ, known in the Bible only as the Mountains of Ararat. From there, they are said to have originally inhabited the hills surrounding the Mesopotamian alluvial plains, which were very likely still underwater for the most part. These were the beginnings of the so-called hunter-gatherers, who are found nearly everywhere in the Middle East, in Africa, and in Europe. These persons did not use primitive implements because they were too stupid to know that there was a better way, but rather because they had been denied all of the tools and equipment and capital that we so frivolously or blithely take for granted. These men entered a very new world with no tools to speak of. They were forced to use crude implements because that was all that was available. They had the know-how, but lacked the capital, a skilled and trained workforce, and equipment necessary to manufacture anything more complicated than those stone implements which are so prevalent around the world even today. If one has ever seen an Indian skin an animal with one of these primitive-looking rock chisels, which they still prefer today to all of our modern metallic implements, and sees how quickly and efficiently it can be done, one is forced to begin to rethink whether they are so stupid or primitive after all. All of our efforts begin to look like efforts at reinventing the wheel, which, by the way, was already done by the ancient Sumerians and almost undoubtedly would have been brought to this side of the flood by Noah. Finally, as the floodwaters continued to recede, Noah and his children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren began to spread out through the hills surrounding what has now become the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, which is nothing less than the marks left behind which conclusively show that there was water on Mount Ararat. It is a huge, approximately 50-mile long by 20-mile-wide pile of mud that has apparently made its way down off the slopes of Angri Dağ and the mountains surrounding it, spilling into the valleys south of the mountain range and creating there the headwaters of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. That is to say, if one simply went south from Angri Dağ, the site most commonly thought to be the landing site of Noah's Ark, or if one simply followed the rivers that start just south of the mountain and follow them out to the sea, one would end up in the valley that came to be known as Mesopotamia. Meso being Greek for middle, and potamos being Greek for river. So the river in the middle. That is the land between the two rivers. Here, as we all now know, is where the first civilization sprung up out of the ground, as if out of nowhere, fully developed. So much so that it has even given speculation to intergalactic travels between similarly situated planets containing advanced life forms. One really must wonder how men turned from hunter-gatherers into civilized persons unless we have things mixed up. Logically speaking, it would have happened one of several ways. First, perhaps the hunter-gatherers are actually remains left following a catastrophe, such as a meteor impact or large asteroid impact, and there are just so many of them that they are found in many different strata. If this were so, then it would be possible for the very earliest persons coming down off of the mountain to start an advanced civilization. Or perhaps the godly portion of them started ancient Sumeria, while the stone tools are what were used by those who refused to live in cities and instead became what we today know as the African tribes or barbarians or aborigines or Indians. For if you think about it, these persons are still using the same tools that they have used for thousands of years, even at this time. Or perhaps an ungodly portion of them came down off the mountain and started the city, while the godly fled. This would seem to be the closest to the biblical account. And it is godly wanderers who wandered the earth, while the wicked gathered together and created a new religion and so-called civilization, i.e. cities. The Bible, as well as ancient Greek writings, tell us that it was Nimrod who started the building of cities. Nimrod was said to be a mighty hunter. He was also said to be a hunter of men. It would appear that tribal skirmishes had been developed into full-scale war of a scope very similar to that of medieval Europe. This mighty one, Nimrod, is said to have hunted men. Ancient depictions show Nimrod as being quite plainly of African origin. He was said to be an enormous man. He it is who has given us our stories of Atlas, Zeus, and Hercules. He was said to have fought a bull with his bare hands. He killed the bull and then cut off its head. He then held the bull's head above his own head as a gesture of victory. The crowd loved it so much that they have celebrated it ever since that day, even to this. It was from this event that the horns that are seen on Sumerian kings and the horns that are seen on Viking helmets and in Egyptian drawings, etc., have since that event commemorated that victory of man over beast by wearing horns. It is an ancient symbol of power. That is why the king wore a hat with horns. That is why priests wore horns. They were a symbol of power, just as the towers of a battlement later became the shape of the crown worn throughout much of Sumerian history and from there into nearly every major kingship since. It was also from this event that we find the devil, called a dark one, who has two horns and cloven hooves in place of feet. It was the same symbolism that gave rise to the winged bulls so prevalent in Assyria and Babylon. While the bull was the fertility symbol, in addition to being a symbol of great strength, the wings were a symbol of the extent of the power. A huge bull with huge wings was a way of saying that a particular king was very, very powerful. So much so that you may realistically expect to have your head cut off at any given second just because he does not like something about you. This symbol carried over into ancient Israel and basically stood for everything that Yahweh stood against. It was this very bull that is found at the foot of the mount, with the people having an orgiastic fertility rite, even while Moses spent 40 days and nights on Mount Sinai, obtaining very specific instructions about many different things from Yahweh. They had made it of gold, which we now know, thanks to 150 years of archaeological research, that this gold was a very popular metal for making religious statues to be bowed to and worshipped. It is also found throughout Mediterranean Europe and is especially prevalent in Crete and Mycenae. It is especially well known as the legend of the Minotaur, the half-man, half-bull, who was forced to live inside the earth because he was so ugly that any who saw him would gather up a force that would come after him to try to kill him. The legend of King Minos. Some even think that Spanish bullfighting is a vestige of this religious belief. Now, in order for Nimrod to have people to hunt, it is required that there be more than one group of persons. It seems that by the time that Sumer began, there were already a number of different groups of persons, probably similar to what we would think of today as tribes. These groups would almost undoubtedly fight with one another on a regular basis. We can be fairly sure of this because even the very earliest of depictions of kings show them warring with and killing their enemies. As a matter of fact, this is almost the definition of a king. He is what we would think of today as a great tribal leader, who is also a military leader, who leads his army into the land of his neighbors in order to plunder their goods, rape their women, and steal their land by means of imposing a highly bureaucratic administrative system in place of their tribal customs, complete with a constant demand for tax dollars, any amount of which is never enough in order to finance this abomination. These so-called civilizations would then last only so long as it took them to plunder every single neighbor that they had, as far out as they could reach, being bound only by the law of diminishing returns, until at last they had consumed all of the goods and services that they had plundered and wanted yet more. And then, being willing to entirely bankrupt their entire society in order to continue to live at a level of profligacy beyond anything imaginable. The first civilization, Sumeria, which is believed to have started about 3500 BC, was made of mud. The next civilization, Egypt, which is believed to have started around 3000 BC, was made of colossal stones. The first large construction projects involved the building of temples and surrounding structures in a temple complex. The first large buildings were pyramidal. They were originally step pyramids. That is to say, they did not have smooth sides, but instead a series of steps, each layer of bricks being somewhat narrower than the previous layer, with a small building on top where all could see that some kind of important ritual was being carried out.